Grab your Bibles and an outline. You'll find your outline in the bulletin. Turn to Colossians chapter 3 in your Bibles. We are knee-deep in our study of biblical stewardship. And as we as a church face the open doors that God has placed before us, it's very important that we understand in order to go beyond the open door, we must be prepared spiritually. Many a runner has failed to win a race because they had not prepared, they did not have proper conditioning. Many an army has stumbled on the battlefield because they had no preparation, they didn't have the supplies or the ammunition they needed. And many a church has stumbled in going forward to fulfill God's mission for them because the people were not spiritually sharp. They were more connected to the world than to the Word, and they lost ground. As we come together today, this message that we're going to be looking at today is very, very practical. It's a rubber meets the road, this is how to live kind of message. And in order to start the message, we have to start with our presuppositions. And I believe that there are two myths when it comes to wealth and work. When it comes to the idea of work and wealth, two myths that we believe that I want to expose to us today and show you a biblical difference. In Colossians chapter 3, starting with verse 22, Paul is writing about the context of work. In fact, the most basic relationship of all, in verse 22, he says, "Slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything, and do it not only when their eye is on you to win their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord." And then he gives the reason why they should obey. He says in verse 23, "Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving." Now here in this most basic context of employer-employee, of slave and master, in this most basic context, Paul is telling the one that's under, the slave, the servant, that when they come to this whole issue of work, that they ought to work in a very special way. It ought to be from the heart. It ought to be not just to win the approval, because there's a higher principle here under which they're operating, and that same principle applies to you. Here is our first myth. Write it down. The myth is this: I work for my employer. I work for my employer. You do not work for Michael Dell. Biblically, who do you work for? Who is your boss? Who is the one that you are serving when you punch the clock at 8 or 7 or 6 or 5:30? Who is it? According to this passage of Scripture, he says that it is Jesus Christ that we serve. Look at verse 23. He says, "Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men." If you ever take the view that your job is to work for your employer and him alone, you will live a sub-Christian life when it comes to work. You are working for Jesus Christ. In fact, he even punctuates that in verse 24. Look at what he says. He says at the end of it, "It is the Lord Christ you are serving." When you go into the office tomorrow morning, when you go on the job site tomorrow morning, when you go into the school tomorrow morning, wherever your place of employment will be, your boss is not your primary person to please. Your primary person to please is Jesus Christ. And by the way, Jesus Christ has a great standard, a work ethic that includes not only your actions and your production, but also includes your attitude and your behavior on the job. Ultimately, you work for Jesus Christ. He's your boss. And you need to view this work from his standpoint. The second myth is this: my wages are my reward for working. Write it down. My wages are my reward for working. Hey man, I work hard. I put in the time. I put in the effort. When I get paid on the 15th, when I get paid on the 31st, That is my money. I worked for it, and that is my reward for all of this effort that I put out. Right? Wrong. Look at the passage again. He says in verse 23, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men. Why? Since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. What is your reward? It's something that's coming from the Lord. In fact, the word reward there means to be fully paid. Paid in full. It says you are going to receive a reward from Jesus Christ, your ultimate employer, and that reward is going to be full payment for your labor. And the reward here given in this verse is an inheritance. Now, what does that mean? Well, it sure meant a lot to a slave. A slave could own nothing of his master's property. He worked his whole life and he died, and all of it was passed along to the owner and the owner's kids. Do you ever feel like that? You know, I'm working so hard, and it seems like the product of my labor outside of my paycheck is going to fatten the pockets of the CEO of my company, or going to fatten the pockets of the shareholders of my company. I'm not getting anything for all that I put in. No, you're looking at the wrong thing. The reward comes from your real boss. Your real boss is Jesus Christ. The concept of inheritance summarizes all that we talked about at the end of the book of Revelation. Remember when we came to the end of the book of Revelation and we talked about heaven and the holy city, the new Jerusalem, and the blessing of the kingdom and all of that? That is ultimately going to be your paid in full for everything you did for Jesus Christ on this earth. We looked at the parable a couple weeks ago of the talents. Remember, the guy got 5 talents and he went out and worked, and he brought back 5 more. And what did his master say to him? I'm going to give you a raise? That's not what he said, was it? He didn't say, I'm going to give you a raise. He said, come into my inheritance. Come and enjoy all that I have. In fact, everything I have, you now have a share in it. You're part of my family. The same is true of Jesus Christ. He says, you work for me. And you spend your life working for me. And what you're going to get as a reward is not a paycheck, but you're going to get all of heaven thrown in. Now, that's if you've had a relationship with Jesus Christ and trusted him, and you're working for the Lord. So your pay is not your reward for your work. You say, well, what is my pay then? I'm very glad you ask. That's a very, very pivotal concept for the Christian life. Now, understand me. If you do not understand this concept, how wages, work, and your life relate to each other, if you do not have a grasp on this, you will have a struggle throughout all of your Christian life. You will never come to grips with materialism and Christianity. You'll never find a fit. Until you can grasp this concept and apply it in your life, you will always struggle with the world's view of money. The concept is this. My wages are not my reward for work. My wages are an additional trust, an additional responsibility to be managed. Not only do I manage my time and the way I work for the Lord, but I also manage the result of that, my wages. If you ever get the concept in your mind that your reward or your wages are your reward for work, you will believe that you are sovereign over your stuff. I earned this, it's mine, I will use it any way I want to. Don't tell me, Jesus Christ, how I ought to use my money. Don't tell me, Bible, how I ought to use my money. Don't tell me, believers, how I'd use my money. I worked for it, this is the reward, this belongs to me, I own it, and it's mine. That story was brought home to me in a very significant way when I read a story by Sue Freshour. She was telling a thing that happened between her and her sister a number of years ago. It was very interesting. Sue and her sister Marjorie were walking along the beach at Crystal Lake, Michigan. And her sister Marjorie looked down in the sand, and there in the sand was a $20 bill sticking up. She jumped down there, grabbed that $20 bill, pulled it up, and she was holding it up, and the two began to talk about how lucky Marjorie was to find this $20 bill. It was a lot of money, and Marjorie was talking about what she could do with it. Now, Sue had to admit that she was a little bit frustrated because she was not the lucky one to find the money. But that frustration didn't last long, because a few paces down the sand, there was another $20 bill sticking up, to which Sue grabbed that $20 bill and put it in her pocket, and the two went home. That $20 bill began to burn a hole in Sue's pocket. All she could think about is, what am I going to do with this $20? For those of you who have kids, you know what I'm talking about. You've seen it. What am I going to do? I got some money. I better spend it. Well, that's how she felt. She put that $20 in her dresser drawer, and as she lay in bed at night, all she could think about is, $20, what am I going to do with it? What am I going to do with it? And at last she came upon the conclusion. She said, aha, I know what I'm going to do with it. I'm going to spend it on me, the whole $20. And I'm going to spend it on something that I don't need. I'm going to spend it on something completely frivolous. I'm going to buy something for me that I would have never bought with my own money. I'm just going to blow it, and I'm going to have a great time doing it. The next morning, Sunday worship, as the plate was being passed, Sue was very surprised to see her sister Marjorie reach into her pocket and pull the $20 bill out and place it in the offering plate. That day, Sue said, I learned an awful lot about my sister, but I learned a lot about me, too. She concludes the story by saying, come to think of it, I cannot remember what I bought with my $20, but I do remember my sister's commitment to a higher calling. And that's the way we live life. Either we view our money as something that we earned, and we use it any way we want to, or we recognize that God gave us the ability to work. He gave us the opportunity. He placed us where He wanted us to be. He is our boss. And whatever we receive financially for that is still a trust to be managed properly according to His priorities for our life. It will save you infinite misery when you begin to recognize that God's plan for your money will always be best. And you know what? When you follow it, you will find a freedom like you've never known. You say, well, what are we supposed to do with our money? I'm glad you asked that, because the Bible tells us. In fact, the Bible lays out four priorities for our money. And if we keep those priorities in balance, now as I say priorities, I'm not saying priority number one is the most important, and priority number two is second and third and fourth. Four equal priorities that if we keep them in balance, we will discover God's clear plan for the way we use our financial resources. Let me give those to you. What do we do with the wealth that we have? First priority, support our families meeting their physical needs. The first priority for work and wages is to support our families meeting their physical needs. I'm going to give you a number of scriptures to look at, and what I'm going to do is put them on the overhead so you can follow them on the overhead. You may want to write down the reference so you can look these up at home and study them further. The first reference comes from way back in the beginning in the Garden of Eden, in Genesis chapter 3, verses 17 through 19. God says to Adam, the first man, cursed is the ground because of you. Now this is after the fall. Through painful toil you will eat of it all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow you will eat your food until you return to the ground. Now, did you ever have a college counselor tell you that if you can match your profile of personality to a specific job, and you can train for that job, and you can go get into that job, that you will be fulfilled and happy with your work the rest of your life? Anybody ever have anybody tell you that? They weren't being completely honest, were they? Work is a four-letter word. It's hard. It requires effort. It requires toil. Should we be surprised? Not at all. Because from the very beginning, we are told that the result of the curse would be that we would earn a living, that we would provide for our financial needs, that we would feed our families by working. That's God's plan for us to meet our needs. That plan is reiterated even more in the New Testament. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 10, Paul says, for even when we were with you, we gave you this rule. If a man will not work, he shall not eat. Whoa. That's a new concept. Think how that would change the face of American life if that rule was applied in our world today. Now, keep in mind, he doesn't say if a man cannot work, he will not eat. There are situations where people cannot work because of changes in the economy, because of a loss of job, a situation where a person is physically ill or disabled. There are situations where people cannot work. But if a person has the ability to make a living, it is their responsibility to work and support themselves, take care of their physical needs, feed their families. He goes on to say, we hear that some among you are idle. They are not busy, they are busy bodies. Such people we command and urge in the Lord Jesus Christ to settle down and earn the bread they eat. What do? We work, we earn a living, we use that money to provide for the physical needs of ourselves and our family. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8, Paul writes, if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for his immediate family, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. The worst possible thing that Paul can think of that a person would do, especially a Christian, would be to not take care of their own, not to work, support their family, take care of their physical needs, meet the needs of their family. So the first priority that God lays out for how we will use our money, when we get a paycheck in, part of our money should go to meet the physical needs of our family. Now, we're talking about four principles. And the easiest thing to do is to elevate one over the other. So I'm going to give you a caution with each one of these principles. The caution that comes with meeting these needs is that we're careful in how we define needs. We live in a culture where image is a need. You understand that? Image is a need. How I appear is a need. How I feel about myself is a need. So if it requires me to buy something that I cannot afford, I justify that by saying it's a need that I have in order to feel good about myself. That's not how the Bible defines needs. We looked at it last week. The Bible defines needs as the basics of life. Having a roof over our head, having clothes on our back, having food to eat, having our basic medical expenses taken care of. Those are the things that are needs. And we must be very careful that we don't go beyond that and begin to define needs in terms of extravagances, and so therefore we cloud our judgment when it comes to this area. We need to be spending our money, part of our money, to support our families and provide our physical needs. Now every once in a while I'll meet a self-made man, and I'll meet a self-made woman, and she or he will say to me, you know, I came from poverty. You should have seen how hard I had it. You know the old saying, I had to walk 5 miles to school in the snow with no shoes, uphill, both ways. And invariably comes behind that, and look at me today, that built character in me, that built endurance in me. Those hardships made me who I am. And then in the next breath, they say, but I'm not going to let my kids have to go through that. Now, how illogical that is. How illogical is it for a person to say, the hardships of life built character into me, but I am going to protect those people that I love from the hardships of life. We need to be careful that we do not handicap our offspring by making it too easy for them, by providing everything for them, by meeting every little want that they might have, because we are damaging a whole generation of kids. There is a whole generation of kids that cannot endure anything for more than 15 minutes unless they've got a controller in their hand that they're pushing on. What is that going to do to the endurance that it takes to get through college? What is that going to do to the endurance that it takes to hold down a job and to work hard? What does that do to a generation of people when all they ever want, they always get? You know, every once in a while, saying no to needs, or at least wants, is a very healthy thing for our character. And there's a caution there. God gives us our money. He says, use this money to meet your needs. But be careful how you define your needs. Secondly, our priority is to pay our obligations and our debts. Our priority is to pay our obligations and our debts. Notice in Romans chapter 13, verses 7 and 8, give everyone what you owe him. And then he picks out the one in the list that we hate the most. He wants to make his point right from the beginning. If you owe taxes, pay your taxes, okay? If you owe your taxes, pay your taxes. If revenue, that is, if you have a revenue that you need to pay, you've got an employee that needs money, you've charged your gas bill to the gas company, your electric bill. I mean, if you owe somebody money for something that you've collected or something they've done for you, you need to pay revenue. If respect, then respect. If honor, then honor. Let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another, for he who loves his fellow man has fulfilled the law. What he's saying is there's only one debt that should not be in the process of being paid off, and that's the debt of love, because you'll never pay that off. You'll pay on it, and 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 you'll never pay it off. But every other obligation, you must be in the process of paying it off. What he's saying is you should be current on paying your obligations. Now, some have used this passage to say that nobody should have any debt at all. That's not what the passage is teaching. The passage is talking about leaving a debt outstanding or not taking care of it. If you are making monthly payments on your debts, they are not outstanding. You are making the payments that you agreed on. Now, here's the unique thing in our culture that Paul didn't have to wrestle with. What about revolving credit? What about simply paying the interest on a debt? Is that leaving the debt outstanding? Our elders have had lots of good discussions on that, and we've kind of come to the conclusion that if you're just paying the interest on a note, you're not paying the note off. You're just prolonging it. You're not paying the debt. And we live in a culture today where you can charge something and pay interest on it for the rest of your life, but never really pay the debt off, or pay it off at such an extreme different time that it just doesn't make sense. The caution for debt, and the reason why so many Christians want to make this verse say don't have any debt, is because debt is a very dangerous thing. Because debt plays against our contentment. Remember our principle? When we're content with what we have, and so often we're not content, so we go out and we purchase something that we cannot afford, and pay interest at a rate that devalues it so quickly, so that we have merchandise in our house that we owe more on it today than what it originally cost new, and the merchandise is not worth anything today, and we find ourselves in a situation where we're mortgaging the future. You know, a lot of people who don't feel like they're making enough money and they're mad at their employer really have no right to be mad at their employer. The reason why you feel like you're not making enough money is not because you're not getting paid what other people who do your job get paid. The reason why you feel like you're not making enough money is because you've taken on obligations that put you in a tight spot. And rather than being mad at yourself and saying, why do I not have the self-control to keep me from doing this? I get mad at my boss and say, why doesn't the guy pay me more? That would solve my problems. Remember, you're working for the Lord Jesus Christ. And if Jesus Christ is satisfied with setting your salary at what you're currently making, then you should be happy with that and rejoice in that and live within your means. The second one is we should pay our obligations and debts. The third is that we should save for future needs. We should save for future needs. Every person should have some type of a savings account where they're putting away some money for future needs. Let me give you just one passage on that. Proverbs 21:20 says, in the house of the wise men are stores of choice food and oil, but a foolish man devours all he has. In the house of the wise, there's extra. At the end of the day, there's some food put aside. There's some kept in storage. But the foolish man devours all he has, and for some, all we have and more. If you're not living within your means to the point where you can put some money aside for future needs, for a rainy day, for a time when something falls apart, if you're not doing that, then you're living like a foolish person, consuming everything that comes in and not preparing yourself for the future. A wise person puts something into savings for a day when he will need that money. Now, here's a caution. The caution is trying to buy security with our savings account. There is no way, no matter how much money you make and no matter how much you save, there is no way that you could anticipate every potential catastrophe that could come your way and save enough money to cover every single thing. There is a measure of faith when it comes to savings, and savings and faith need to be balanced. You need to put away some money, but you don't need to get yourself in a situation where your God is your savings account. God, if you die tomorrow, that's okay, because I've got money put away to take care of me. In fact, in Matthew chapter 6, Jesus said, hey, don't worry about tomorrow. Trust me, I'll take care of you. So you save, but you save within reason, each one of these in balance. And finally, the fourth area, the fourth priority, is to supply funds to provide for God's ministry. Each person, out of the money that they receive each month, ought to be using some of that money to feed their family, take care of their needs. They ought to be using some of that money to pay their obligations. They ought to be using some of that money to put into savings. And some of that money ought to be going into ministry. You say, show me a verse on that. Let me just give you one. In Galatians chapter 6, Galatians chapter 6, verse 6, Paul writes, anyone who receives instruction in the word must share all good things with his instructor. In the context of this passage, what he's saying is, if you're growing spiritually, you need to be investing materially in that spiritual ministry. Whoever is ministering to your soul ought to be receiving some kind of support or compensation, and that is putting money back into ministry for the ministry that you're receiving. You say, that sounds like a sales pitch. You say, you sound like you're trying to get a raise out of us here. You know, it's kind of like, you know, pay the preacher. Well, that's what the passage teaches. If you are being ministered to, you ought to take some of your resources and put it back into ministry. Now, who benefits from that? Is the minister the one who benefits from that? Or is the one who's being ministered to? You know, every person that goes into ministry, whether they're pastors, whether they're youth workers, whether they're missionaries, every person that goes into ministry has a choice to make. Either they can give themselves full time to the ministry of the word, or they can go get a job. The issue for a person going into ministry cannot and should not ever be what they're going to get out of it financially. But if the people who are doing ministry, the missionaries, the pastors, the evangelists, if they don't receive some kind of compensation, then they can't do the ministry. They've got to go get a job, and they've got to work. So the person who benefits from the giving is the giver, and the kingdom of Jesus Christ is furthered through the ministry. One of the things that I'm excited about the staff of Hill Country Bible Church, is we have 7 pastoral staff. Of the 7 pastoral staff, 3 of them, almost half of them, didn't come the traditional route, you know, go to Bible college, go to seminary, go into ministry. 3 of them were employed in secular careers, making money, good money, and working hard at that, and seeing a career blossom before their eyes. And 3 of our pastoral staff left that and took significant pay cuts in order to serve Hill Country Bible Church. Now that is because, not because they need the money, but because they want to give their heart and their life to serve you. And God calls us that from whatever we're receiving ministry, that we need to be giving back to that as well to further the kingdom of Jesus Christ and to move Jesus Christ's ministry forward. We also use that money to supply the needs of the saints, to fund our children's ministry, our youth ministries, to expand the cause and kingdom of Jesus Christ. And everybody has the opportunity to participate financially in that. And part of your income ought to be going specifically to ministry to further the cause of Jesus Christ. Now, how do you do this practically? You say, Tim, I don't know how to even begin to get there. Well, let me tell you. Number one, evaluate your current situation. Look at your income and ask yourself the question, is my money going to these four priorities? Is part of it being invested in family needs, relative needs? Is part of my money being invested in paying my obligations, being current on my obligations? Is part of my money going into savings? And is part of my money going into ministry? And then the second question that you ask as you evaluate is, am I in balance? Do I feel comfortable with my balance? Am I in a situation where all of my money is going to meet living expenses? And none of it is going into savings? None of it's going into ministry? Am I in a situation where my obligations are so great that I don't even have enough money to eat on because I'm putting all of my money, all of my resources are financially going into paying off obligations and debts? If you're out of balance, you need to start the process of planning to get back in balance. And that brings us to my second point. Prepare a budget that reflects biblical priorities and, most importantly, live with it. Prepare a budget that reflects biblical priorities and then live with it. Live your budget. Carry it out. Suppose that you were to come into our office and walk into our administrator's office, Doug's office, and say, hey, Doug, how much money came in the offering on Sunday? And you were saying, I don't know. Then you count it. No, we just throw it in those bags over there and take it down to the bank. Well, you mean you don't care? No, we don't really care. Well, how do you make spending decisions? Well, one of the pastors wants something, or one of the staff wants something, or a member of the congregation. They just come in, tell us what they want, and we get it for them. Is that right? Like, you don't have any controls? No, not whatsoever. We just do whatever we feel like doing. You'd say, that is irresponsible. That borders on criminal. How could you take somebody else's money and use it that way? Do you ever think God feels that way about you? If we truly believe that everything we have belongs to God, but we are not budgeting and disciplining and thinking through how we use it and how we spend it, if our spending habits are just based on how we feel on any given day, just based on how we feel on any given moment, just whatever comes, and there's no plan, we're not being systematic, we're not being regular, we're not being faithful, are we not saying, God, who cares how I use your money? I'll use it any way I want to. Third, I would recommend that you attend a Crown Ministries class. You say, what is Crown Ministries? Crown Ministries is a ministry we have within Hill Country Bible Church that teaches you how to plan your life financially. It helps you walk through the biblical priorities. It shows you how to prepare a budget, shows you how to stay on a budget, helps you think through that, and you will find in Crown Ministries a tremendous amount of help and support for you to be free from the bondage of the way you approach money, especially if it's improper. Now, I say all that, and the reason why we don't do that is very simple. You know why? Because it's very hard. It's very hard. It's hard to discipline ourselves. It's hard to follow a budget. It's hard to get on a plan. A friend of mine loves garage sailing. Now, to me, I've got junk in my garage that I've been trying to get rid of for a long time, and I cannot imagine coming to your house to pay money for your junk. But I know that some of you just love to do this. And one of my friends really loves to garage sale. This is a highlight of her world, is garage sailing. The other day she was out garage sailing and she walked into the garage of a fairly upper middle class home and she began to look around and she saw in the middle of the table, she saw a jar. She walked over and picked up the jar, and when she picked up the jar, it was filled with pennies, like this. She held the jar up and she said to the lady, how much? The lady said, oh, a quarter. A quarter? She said, there's more than a quarter's worth of pennies in here. The lady said, don't bother. Just a quarter. That's enough. That's all I want for it. Needless to say, she bought the jar and the pennies. Now, suppose I were to say to you, I've got an Abraham Lincoln up here. For some of you who don't deal in these low denominations, it's only a $5 bill. I've got an Abraham Lincoln up here. I've got one of these for everyone in the room. All you have to do is fight the crowd at the end of our time to come up here to the front, and you can have this. I got one for everybody. Just come up at the end. How many of you would be up here for this $5 bill? I have a feeling that some of you are either hungry or you're lying. Okay, let's suppose that instead of the $5 bill, I held up a quarter. You know, just the chopped off head of George. Held up a quarter, said, anybody who's willing to fight the crowd to get up here afterwards, I'll give you a quarter. How many of you would fight the crowd to get up here to get a quarter? Everybody that's under 12 and all those people that are very tight, Chris. That's right. And besides, he's close to the front, but people are close to the front. Do you see the difference? Like, for $5, it's worth the effort. For 25 cents, it's not. To count these pennies is not worth the effort, is it? I know that's true because every one of you have one of these at home. It would take a lot of work to count these pennies, to roll them in those little packets, to take them down to the bank, to get $5 worth out of these. And so you don't do it. And I think that God looks down from heaven and sees us the same way that the woman who was selling the pennies was living. She was saying, I don't have anything worth more than a quarter. This jar is not worth more than a quarter because it would take a lot of work for me to turn this into something valuable. And the same thing is true with your income. In order for you to manage your money in a way that it would really impact your life, that it would really pay off big, that would really provide financially for your future, that would really invest in the kingdom of God, you say, that would be so hard. It would take so much effort and so much work, it's not worth it. You know what God sees? God sees you looking at your paycheck and saying, I just got pennies from heaven. Just a little pittance, that's all I got, and it's not enough to worry about managing. And what God is saying to us is, if I gave it to you as a gift, it's worth the time to manage it. If I gave it to you as a gift, it's enough. And if you will take it and use it in a proper way, you will find it will be multiplied over and over and over again in real, live value to you and to your family and to future generations. See, I believe that there are people in this room that if they truly lined up along these biblical priorities, would never have to worry about having enough money to supply a college education for your children. You know, if you just save all of the money that you will spend going out to eat as a family over the next 20 years, you'll pay a child's way through school. If you're average, many of you here have the ability to give hundreds of thousands of dollars to the kingdom of Jesus Christ on just your $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year income. You have the ability to do that. If you manage your money properly, many of you here can ensure that you will never go hungry a day of your life. If you'll manage your money properly, God has given you a gift. Don't make it out to be a penny. And whether it's small or whether it's great, you're responsible and accountable before God for how you use it. Allow His principles to free you and give you life as you use His money according to His plan.